Well, good evening and welcome back to the Journey Home program. I'm your host, John Mark Grodi. And once again, we have this great privilege here on the Journey Home, here on EWTN, to share another story with you. We're joined by Santonio Hill tonight. He's a lifelong Catholic. We're going to hear about his story there and back again. He's now the director of Gift of Mary Women's Shelter. And you can find out more information about that cool ministry at giftofmary.org. We'll hear more about it later. Santonio, great to have you here tonight, brother.
Pleasure to be here.
I'm excited to hear about your story. And we were chatting beforehand about virtues and prudence and ministry and helping people on their journeys, help people to see that they too are on a journey, that their life is significant. I know we're going to hear some about that in your story, but also in the great work that you're doing now. So it's great to have you here.
Yeah, I'm excited to be here. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. All right, well, let's go way back to the beginning. Where does your story begin?
Yeah, so I'm from Maryland, a nice, small little town called Lexington Park. And growing up there, I honestly never really wanted to stay there. It was all, used to always kind of call it like a tumbleweed town. Yeah. Like, that was growing up. Now I love it. Now I love going back home. There's a lot of character and a lot of, yeah, me in home. And so I appreciate it so much more now. But at the time, it was, yeah. Like, for example, one of the big attractions is this county fair that we have. And on this county fair, it's not a whole, yeah, it's interesting because it's not a whole lot of things that people my age growing up would have found attractive. Maybe it's just me, because it's a lot of agriculture, a lot of like watermen, stuff like that. But I kind of live my life on TV. I just love watching TV and such. But like at this fair, they had contests like who could grow the biggest pumpkin or who can grow the biggest squash, or they had things like who could win these tractor races. Like, it's not just like a regular tractor race. They'll take the typical engine out of whatever John Deere tractor or whatever they may have, and they'll kind of like soup it up a little bit, and they'll go like 50 miles an hour. And that was like the biggest attraction. That was them racing and kind of like showing off. And I'm watching this, and then I go home and I watch like MTV Cribs or like Pimp My Ride by Exhibit and all that. And I'm like, oh, and this is what I have, you know? And so I always kind of wanted to get out of that town. But growing up, I lived with my mom, my grandma, and my sister. And so I always say I was raised by three women because my sister's only 18 months older than me, but she acted like my mom a lot of the time. And so I like to think that I had a pretty good childhood. I born and raised Catholic. We would go to church on Sundays, but if we were to miss a Sunday mass, it wasn't that big of a deal. And so we weren't a family that really prayed together too often. My mom would try to make me pray my prayers at night before going to sleep, and we would pray grace before meals, but that was about it.
Where did that Catholicism come from? Was your mother raised Catholic as well?
Yep. Okay. Mother's raised Catholic, grandma. From as far as I know, I asked my grandma a couple of times, last few times I went back home, and I said, how did we become Catholic? She's like, we just always were. Okay. And so Maryland's a very Catholic state. Mary's land, you know, and we live in St. Mary's County. And so it's just very, very Catholic state. And yeah, it's just embedded in the state there. And so growing up, I would go to youth group, and I really would go to youth group a lot more when I was in high school. But I didn't really go for the right reasons. I didn't go because I was thirsty for like theology or wanted to really like have a great community of Catholics around me. And I didn't care about none of that stuff really. I just really went because it was something to do after church. I knew I could get free pizza, and I could play basketball, and I hung out with people that were different from my typical public school background. A lot of like homeschool families were there. And it was something else to do on a Sunday. And so I went for those reasons. And I also was an altar boy. And so serving, so it's funny. The way I became an altar boy was, so growing up, my mom would, you know, she would start elbowing me in the pews when I would start like dozing off at mass. And she said, you got to get up there. You got to go do something. You got to either be like in a choir, altar boy, something. And so I joined the choir, and I realized real quick that I did not have the voice to keep up with everybody else in the choir. And so I ended up being an altar boy since like second grade all the way up until high school. And I loved it. It was fun. It was fun. Something to do. I would try to stay awake. It was easy to stay awake for me during those times. So yeah, the faith was never really personal for me. Like God was always just kind of, like this this entity that I, if I wanted something from, I would ask really, really nicely, like, pretty please, can I, like, get this or do that? Or but it wasn't really a real enlivened faith, and I didn't have a honest connection with God. That came a little later in life.
Sure.
So in high school, I would say the type of kid that Santonio was growing up was a good kid. I was a good boy. Sound like a dog. I was a good boy. but I also, I guess it's kind of part of the, yeah, part of just the not having like my dad in the household, I would kind of grasp after things that I wanted to be able to fill into this like hole that I would say I had in my heart for my father's love to be there. And so because it wasn't there, I think I was, just grasping for popularity, grasping for immoral things like impurity, things of that nature. And so trying to like take whatever the world would give me. And so I remember I thought to myself one day, because I wanted this lifestyle, a lifestyle that I would see on like Pimp My Ride, like people have like these amazing cars with like goldfishes and like the console. And I'm like, that's crazy. Don't really want that because how would you feed it? But like, that's cool. or like watching like MTV Cribs or like BET How I'm Living and seeing these celebrities with these amazing like rock star homes. And that's kind of like what I wanted. I wanted a big house with a white picket fence and a dog and flat screen TVs before flat screen TVs were a thing. And yeah, wife and kids. And that's just kind of like this like fairy tale lifestyle that I wanted. And I wanted it bad. And yeah, I was just living with my mom, grandma, and my sister. And I'm like, how do I get here? Like, how do I achieve that? You know? And so I thought to myself one day, well, I'm pretty big. A lot of people think I'm going to be a football player one day and maybe go to the NFL. And so I said, I think that's what I'll do. And so I said, all right, I'm going to play football. And that was my goal. And so by the time I got to my senior year in high school, I ended up playing football. I only played for 1 year. I had some other injuries and stuff, just life. And so I played football my senior year, and I ended up getting a scholarship to play at Towson University. And so I'm enthralled. I'm like, wow, this is my chance. Like, this is my dream coming alive here. And so I'm really excited about that, trying to like figure out like, okay, maybe I'll study this. And, but it doesn't really matter because I want to be a millionaire and I want to go to the NFL. And so I remember one day after Mass where I was altar serving still. And Father Scott Woods, he's a great priest, who was a parish priest at the time at the church that I belonged to. One day after Mass, he walks up to me and he says, Santonio, what are you doing after you graduate high school? And so I said, oh, Father Scott, great question. I have a scholarship to go play football. I'm going to do that. I'm going to study this, whatever. It doesn't really matter. But my goal is the NFL. And he said, wow, that's amazing. And it was a pretty big deal because at the time, no, like kids where I'm from didn't get scholarships, athletic scholarships, academic, sure. Mm-hmm. But athletic scholarships after playing like 1 year of football is kind of like a rare, unheard of thing. Mm-hmm. And so I was really proud, and he was proud for me as well. And he said, well, that's good. Good for you, buddy. And I said, thanks. And he said, have you ever thought about going to the seminary? And I said, well, what is the seminary? And he said, oh, it's a place where men can go and study to be priests. Mm-hmm. And within like a millisecond, I thought to myself, wow, he's really trying to get me to like derail off this track that like I've created for myself. And so I said, no, I'm okay. Don't worry about me. You know, I have goals. I want to get married in life. And I have things that I want to do. I don't think you can get married. I don't really know what you do all day either. Like I only see you once a week and you're always here. And so I never see y'all at like grocery stores or whatever. I'm like, I don't know like much about you. So, thanks, but no thanks. And he said, well, how about you pray about it? And like Father Scott saw me at youth group, but he didn't really like look at me at youth group. Maybe he did, but I was like, dude, you don't really know who I am. You know, like I don't pray. And so I said to him, how about I sleep on it? And he said, all right, good man. And so that night I had this dream. And in this dream, I was in this long line of Little League football. And these kids, they had footballs in hand, helmets, shoulder pads, cleats. They were geared up, ready to go. for a game. And I was in line as big as I was without any of this equipment on. And this line led through like mountains and hills and valleys. And it was a bit of a journey. And it led up to this massive castle. And I finally make my way inside this castle. And there's this table. And seated at the middle of this table is this bishop. And on the other side of the bishop are these priests. And so they motion me to step forward. And so I do. They slide me a sheet of paper. And they hand me a pen. And at the time, I'm really cocky. I'm really, really prideful. My head could not fit through any door, you know? And so at the time, I'm thinking, oh, well, they want my autograph, or maybe this is a Sprite endorsement or something. I don't know. But I sign it, I slide it back, and I say, you're welcome. And they take out a big stamp, and they stamp it, and they say, congratulations, now you're a priest. And they give me a bunch of books and sweaters, and I'm thinking, like, what is going on? Like, no way this is my life. I'm pretty sure there's a bit more process to all of this. Father Scott said something about seminary. I know that wasn't seminary. So like, I don't like what's happening. And as he gives me these things, books and sweaters and whatever, he says, your locker's down to the left. Have a nice day. And so I take my things with me. I find my locker. I put the stuff inside. I shut it. And then I wake up from that dream. And I say to myself, yeah, right. The day I become a priest is the day I become terrible at basketball. Now, I got the scholarship in football, but I also played basketball. And so I thought to myself, well, it's impossible I would be terrible at football. And so if I'm bad at anything, it would have to be basketball, maybe. But I'm pretty good at that, too. And so the next night, I had another dream. And it was like an NBA arena. I was playing basketball, lights, camera, action. And at tip-off, they passed the ball to me. And so I knew in the dream, I'm like, okay, I'm the star guy. It makes sense because I'm good. And so, and that whole dream, I missed every single shot. And it was one of the most miserable dreams that I've ever had. And I wake up from that and I'm thinking to myself, whoa, I'm going to be a priest? Like, this is terrible. My life is over. Like, what is going on right now? I don't know what I did to deserve this. And so I have a basketball court, a little hoop outside of my house. Mm-hmm. And this was a weekday. And so I had to go catch the bus to go to school in the morning. And so before I caught the bus to go to school, I just remember like, all right, I'm going to go outside. I'm going to shoot around on my court to see if I'm actually bad at basketball, to see if this dream is real and I'm going to be a priest. Like, this was the logic that I had at the time. Yeah. And so I took about 10 shots and I missed every single one. And I was devastated. Oh, I was just distraught. I'm like, this is it. My life is over. Goodbye to my NFL dreams and aspirations. Why even go to college now? I guess this is just what I'm going to do. Why even go to high school? Like, I'm just going to be a priest. Mm-hmm. Like, you probably don't need to be too smart to be a priest. Later on in life, learn that is not true. And so I remember going to school and I'm distracted all day. And then at lunch, if you want, you can go outside and you can play basketball. You can just like hang outside. You can play. You can do whatever you want outside. And so I remember I picked up a basketball and I started shooting around again and I started making all these shots. And I thought to myself, oh, thank God. I knew I wasn't going to be a priest. Like, that is great. But I thought to myself, like, did I just say thank God? I was like, well, maybe God has something to do with all these dreams, because I've never remembered my dreams before. And they've never played upon each other the way they did in the subconscious and in the conscious. And so I said, I think something's at work. This is not normal. And so let me try to investigate, or let me try to pray. But I didn't know how to pray. I didn't have any spiritual tools, really. Yeah. And so I just felt like a car just like spinning wheels in mud. It's not going anywhere at all. And so I did that for about 3 weeks. And then I go to Father Scott one day after church. I said, all right, Father Scott, can I just talk to you like way over here, like away from everybody? I just got a couple questions to ask you. And he said, sure thing, buddy, what's up? And I think he probably knew what was going on. Because I'm pretty sure he had been praying for me. Yeah. And like way before even having that conversation. And so I asked him, I said, all right, Father Scott, lay it down on me. Like, what do you do? Like, what is your job? You always wear this black dress. Like, what is this? Do you only work one day a week? If so, like, maybe that's a good gig. I don't know. But like, who is the priest? Like, what do you do? And for about 15 minutes, I think Father Scott really tried to explain to me the life of a priest in a way that I would be able to understand at the level of discipleship where I was in my life. Yeah. And just hearing him talk, I thought it was actually like really beautiful and like really noble. And I'm like, wow, I think I could.
What did he highlight?
He just highlighted like service. You know, he said, we as a priest, we're here to serve the people. I am here as, and yeah, this is the way he kind of explained to me at the time. Yeah. Like, I'm here as like an extension of God in some ways to like really bring upon to you all Jesus and like connect you all to God as much as I possibly can. And he said, every single mass, this is not just a symbol. This like, and I had confirmation. Like, I did all the sacraments up to that point that I was supposed to be doing. And he said, this is not just a symbol, like this bread and this wine. It's not just bread and wine. Like, this is truly the body and blood of Jesus Christ. Every single mass celebrated all throughout the world, not just here in St. Mary's County at St. Peter Claver Church in Indigo's, Maryland. Everywhere throughout the world is this mass. This is happening. This miracle takes place. And I just was in awe of like, wow, are you, I thought this was like, I don't know, like candy or what. I just thought it was just a symbol, you know. I just didn't think I didn't think the weight carried that deeply. And so I said, wow, that's amazing. And God chose you to do this. He said, yeah, it's my vocation. I was like, wow, that's big. I don't hear about miracles happening. And so from that point, my interest was kind of piqued. And I said, well, okay, maybe I'll pray about this. We'll see what happens. And I said, I'm going to go home and pray. He said, I'm going to pray for you too. And I said, please do not pray for me. You probably have a 1-800 hotline number to God. I don't need this. You know, I don't need you praying for me. Because then God will probably just say like, all right, we got him, Father Scott. And I just wanted to be, I guess, just like the free will. You know, I wanted to be able to make this decision on my own, whether or not I am called to this. And he said, remember, it's not just you being a priest immediately. You go to seminary and you discern whether or not this is a call or not. He was like, I know plenty of people, plenty of men who have gone to seminary and they've left. Mm-hmm. And so I said, okay. And so I go home and I take a crucifix off my wall and I'm looking at it. Mm-hmm. I'm staring at it and I'm just saying to myself, I don't get it. It doesn't make any sense. You know, they say this Jesus God man died for me to have life, but I don't understand it whatsoever. But at the same time, I've also never heard anybody refute it. And so I said to myself, well, this must be true. Jesus must have died for me to have life. Even though I don't understand it, for some reason, I believe it. And I said to myself, well, that's really awesome. That's really awesome that he would give me a shot at life. And so I said to myself, well, since God gave me a shot at life, I might as well give him the first shot at my life to see what it is that he wants me to do. And I think it's seminary. And so I'm going to go on ahead and I'm going to choose seminary. And I'm going to just decline a scholarship.
What an amazing openness of your heart there. I just want to go back up for a second. Because, like, again, that point that you made about finding yourself, even in the midst of your consternation, saying, thank God. And then thinking about the fact, why did I just say thank God right there? You know, sometimes just even if we're wrestling with God.
Yeah.
Even if we're wrestling against God. That's better than being lukewarm in a certain sense, right? When we even get into that dialogue of like, what does God want from me? Maybe I don't want that. And maybe I tell God that, that's still prayer.
Yeah.
And that's still powerful. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think he just used it, you know, it's so funny. Because me truly like struggling for those 3 weeks, I had no clue what prayer really was. Yeah. I wasn't like down on my knees. I was just kind of like throughout my day in class when I should be paying attention. I'm like, but God, how do you... How is this? What's going on? And he used all of that to allow me to continue to like get closer and closer and closer to him. Yeah. I think to just be able to, like you said, open myself up more to what his will is for me. Yeah. And that's why I think like ultimately is the reason why I went to seminary. I kind of, I ended up going to seminary and I kind of had this thought in my mind that like, I think God wants me to be here because I think I have a rocky heart. And I don't know where I got all this stuff from. I really don't know. I think some of those homilies that Father Scott would say, I think kind of actually was sticking and coming out through osmosis at the end of the day or something like that. And so I just kind of said to myself, I think I have a rocky heart and I think that I need to continue to get closer to God so my heart can become soft and moldable like clay so I can do what it is that God wants me to do in my life to follow his will. Because Father Scott would say, if you do God's will, you'll be most happy, even though I didn't know what that meant. And so I think it was me trying to figure out what that meant. I made the decision and I told my mom, I said, hey, and I'm like, how am I going to say this? Because I'm thinking like, all right, get the whole family out of this tumbleweed town by being a millionaire NFL football player. And here I am saying like, hey, mom, I think I'm actually not going to go with a football route. Hmm. She wasn't upset at all. Hmm. She said, Santonio, I knew that you would be involved in a church somehow. I just wasn't sure how. And I said, huh? Like that, these conversations never came up in the house. Like never. The extent of like talking about God will be, how do y'all like the homily after church on a drive back home? And that's it. Mm-hmm. Like we did not bring up God in the household very much, very often. And so I'm like, well, all right. Like if you have some like prior knowledge here, like, can you please like lay it on me? And so a few years later, so I'm kind of getting ahead of myself, but I'll make sure I reach track back.
Yeah.
She said, well, Santonio, before you were born, obviously I already had your sister and I was living in a rough situation where I didn't really have a whole lot of money. I didn't know how to really provide for two kids. And so when I was pregnant with you, I contemplated abortion with you just because I didn't know how I would be able to take care of you. And she said, well, one day I had this real come to Jesus moment and she kind of, just sat with herself and with God. And she said, you know what? I don't think I can do this. I don't think I can go through and in the life of this child of mine. But I don't know how to take care of this child at the same time. And so she said at that moment, she said she made this prayer. She said, God, you have to take care of this child. He's yours now because I can't. And then she went on ahead and had me. And so she said she figured that, like, I would just belong to God in some way. And so when I came to her and let her know, like, hey, I'm going to go to seminary. And she said, all right. And I was like, wow. She was more open and she surrendered a lot more than I was. Mm-hmm. Even though it seemed like a kind of a quick decision for me. It took maybe 3.5-4 weeks or so. Mm-hmm. But I was like, wow, okay.
That's amazing. A mother's prayers. Right, they're powerful.
Yeah.
They're in the background. Wow.
Oh, my goodness, yes.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, and so so going to seminary,
Which seminary was it?
Oh, so I studied for the Archdiocese of Washington, D.C., okay. And I was in minor seminary. That's where you go when you go right out of... When you graduate from high school and you feel a call to the priesthood, you go to minor seminary. And so the minor seminary that I went to was in New York. It was called Dunwoody. As a whole, that was a major seminary, but within Dunwoody, they had a minor seminary section, which was called St. John Newman, or some people said Neumann. Yeah. And so I belonged there. So it was a lot of New York guys, a lot of CFRs that were actually a part of that as well, and then the DC guys. We were always called the DC guys in the house. And so I go to seminary in New York, and I was studying philosophy at St. John's University in Queens. And this is just kind of like how raw I was. And you have to go through a whole vetting process, and you have to see, you have to do a lot of work, legwork before going into seminary. They don't just accept anybody. And so I, going through all of that, I'm still so shocked and surprised that they accepted me because I was just really, really raw going in. You know, I'm used to going to parties. I'm used to just living a lifestyle of grasping of what does the world have to offer me? Mm-hmm. I want it all. Because there was a hole in my heart for God as well. And I would fill that hole in my heart with other. And so when I went to seminary, you don't go and immediately become holy or immediately know what virtue is or immediately like know how to struggle well, you know, with something. And so I was just openly like doing things, you know, we had adoration every day at 5:15 a.m. and every day I would bring a pillow with me and I would fall asleep. And that just kind of shows you a little bit of like where I was. Mm-hmm. And so I remember it was maybe my first or second month in seminary. We take classes with everybody else. It's a regular population of students at the university. And so I had this one class and there was this one girl and I really liked her. And I knew I was in a seminary. I knew I wasn't really supposed to date, but I also really wasn't explicitly told like, hey, no girlfriends, by the way. And so I ended up asking this girl out on a date and we were boyfriend girlfriend for like a month and I didn't tell anybody about it. And like God just had so much I think just like grace for that situation to not be found out and for it to be handled like very peacefully, because for a month we dated, and then about a month in, just being like a typical, I guess, just teenage boy, thinking like, this is it. Like, I found it. Like, this is the love of my life. Like, very emotionally immature. And I said to myself, I'm going to ask her to marry me. I'm like, what is going on at the time? And so I remember, like, making this prayer. Like, this was the first time I started, like, praying. I just got to me to throw away the pillow at adoration. And I started being on my knees and asking God, like, all right, God, is she the one? You know, like, what's going on? Mm-hmm. And it just hit me. Like, I gave up a scholarship. I gave up a football scholarship to see if this is where I'm supposed to be, see if I'm supposed to actually be a priest. I have to end it with this girl, like, as hard as this may be. And so I reached out to her and I said, hey, we should talk after class. And she said, yeah, I got something to say to you as well. And I was like, okay. And so we're talking, and I said, you have something to say, you know, ladies first, because what I'm about to say is going to be kind of rough. And so she said, yeah, you know, it just kind of hit me yesterday that I feel like I'm stealing a priest away from God, and I don't think I can do that right now. And so we need to break up. And I said, wow. I said, I was going to do the same thing, the same conversation I was going to have. And so she said, yeah, this is for the better. I said, yeah, I think so. And so we kind of like shook hands and went to our separate ways. And then that's when I kind of started trying to give more of myself to God. What did that mean? Wasn't really too sure yet, but I try to stay awake during adoration. I try to actually to pay attention in theology class. I try to actually to hang out with my brother seminarians and try to discover like what is a good virtuous friendship and what is a good virtuous brotherhood. And try to like dive into that more. And so go ahead.
Well, let's take a break there actually. And it's time for a break here. So we'll pick it back up in a couple minutes and hear more about that seminary life. And again, this turning point, once again, you have this moment of wrestling with God, and then it opens you up to say, you know what? I am going to give this a shot. It's really, really neat stuff. So we'll be back in just a couple minutes. Thanks for joining us for this episode. Again, we'll be back in a couple minutes to hear the rest of Santonio's story. I want to remind you that if you go to chnetwork.org, you can find all sorts of stories from every different background, from someone's background like yours. You'll be surprised at what you'll find there. So check out chnetwork.org and sign up for our free newsletter then. We'll be back in just a couple minutes to hear the rest of Santonio's story. Well, hello and welcome back to the Journey Home program. We're entering our second half of the hour tonight, speaking with Santonio Hill. He's a lifelong Catholic who, you know, went a roundabout way, found himself in seminary on his journey to where he is now in ministry. And so he's also the director of Gift of Mary Women's Shelter at giftofmary.org. You can find out more information about that. But we'll talk about that more in a little bit, Santonio. So, hey, thanks for sharing your story with us. We left off, you know, you're in seminary. You've just had this relationship that you've broken off, and you realize I need to take this more seriously, more intentionally. Mm-hmm. So you're digging into seminary life. Pick up there, if you would.
Yeah. So the seminary in New York was just always supposed to be a temporary thing, because being a seminarian for the Archdiocese of Washington, Corner World at the time always had planned to have a minor seminary in D.C. And so my sophomore year, it opens up. And so I'm the first class of St. John Paul II Seminary. At the time, it was Blessed John Paul II. He wasn't quite yet canonized. Yeah. And so, that was where, like, the real, I would say, hard work took place. Because in D.C., I had a closer watch on me. And so, they're not allowing all that foolishness that would kind of take place in New York. Yeah, I remember before that second year had started, I was a camp counselor for this camp called St. John's Summer Program. And I would say this camp is led by this man named Rich Olin. He really put in a lot more groundwork for me actually to be I think about my story, and it's such like a collaboration of people that allowed me to have a solid foundation. Yeah. And I got to tip my hat off to Rich Olin, because he really was there that helped me out. And it's so funny, because even though I was in a seminary, and everybody's thinking like, oh, he's a seminarian, he's probably really solid, I really was flighty. I was really not a solid mentor, maybe in some ways of like just seeing like, hey, he gave his yes and he's trying. But like when it came to knowledge and the intellectual stuff, I really am like, hey, I'm learning right now. You know, I didn't study any of this stuff in high school. We didn't really have this stuff in the home and such. And so when it comes to all this theology and everything, I'm learning so much. And so I remember that summer at this camp, he had this book that he wanted everybody to read. He had just kind of started learning a little bit more about purgatory. And so this book called Hungry Souls, or Hunger for Souls, I think it's called Hungry Souls. I was learning about that, and it really made an impact on my life. And so while I was at this camp reading this book, I was still a seminarian for the summer back home. And so Father Scott would have me kind of shadow him from time to time still. And I would do sick calls and, you know, minister the Eucharist to people with his blessing and the blessing of the bishop. Mm-hmm. And I would just kind of shadow him around and such. And so there was this one day where I had this sick call, and I went to go talk to this man. Well, yeah, I was going to go talk to this man and, you know, minister to him by myself. And I usually go with Father Scott, but this day Father Scott said, all right, Satana, you got it by yourself. And I'm like, okay. And so I go, and the wife answers the door, and she's like, oh, you must be here for my husband. And I say, yeah, I am. Can I come inside? She's like, yeah, come inside, and I'm gonna go wake him up. And unfortunately, she went back there to wake him up, but he was already dead. And so it was such a moment for me of just trying to minister to that family in that moment, sure. But then afterwards, this book that I read, Hungry Souls, and talking all about purgatory, I just kind of took it on for myself to like, I'm going to pray for this man. You know, I don't know who is praying for him, but I'm going to pray for him every single day, especially at this camp, because at the camp we had time for adoration, time for mass, and a theology hour as well. And so I would pray for this man, and I had this one dream about him. And in this dream, it was interesting. And it seemed like he was in a place of waiting, and I really couldn't understand it quite yet. I'm like, I don't know what this really means. He was really, really small. And it was a large, just like white back, like everything was just white. And he was just really, really small. And then it started zooming in on him more and more and more. And he just looked, not unwell, but just kind of in a state of waiting. And I didn't know what that meant. And so I just kept praying and kept praying. And then about a week later, I had another dream of this man, and I was at church, and I was serving in this dream, serving mass. And I will always shake his hand, and he always say something to me or whatnot. Like this one time I remember I shook his hand, this was during Christmas, and he knew I was in the seminary, and he had flipped me like $5 or $10, something like that. He said, keep up the good work. And so I was like, wow, that's, I'll keep doing this seminary thing if I keep getting money, you know, not really. But so in the dream, I remember it was a sign of peace. And so I go and I shake his hand, and he just whispers in my ear, like, you're doing great. Like, keep up the good work. I'm so proud of you. And then I just remember hearing him like laugh. And it was just such a beautiful mass. And it was a really beautiful day. And I can't be for certain, but like in that dream, to me, it seemed like God had kind of given me, a grace to be able to just like communicate with him. Mm-hmm. And for somehow, and to kind of like give a sign of like, hey, he's in heaven. Mm-hmm. Maybe go back to that family that you've been ministering to this summer and go back and say, hey, I had these dreams, and share. Mm-hmm. And so I did. And I kind of, I'll never know for sure until one day I die and hopefully make it to heaven.
But it's a confirmation of the impact, the power of prayer. You know,
yeah.
This is real. This matters. Prayer for souls does matter.
Yes. Yeah. And so I took that with me to seminary my second year, and I'm like, all right, it's time. I think I should buckle down, because I was kind of able to put a little bit more flesh on a bone of like, wow, like this faith journey isn't just like me in my closet praying how Jesus said I should. You know, this is a lot more outward than what I thought. And especially me being like on this road to potentially being a priest, there's a lot more to it. And so I remember one day I was in spiritual direction, and I still am so new to all of this stuff. And the priest, Father William Gurney, amazing man. He once again, one of these people that really helped build my foundation well. He, in spiritual direction, he said, who is Jesus? And he had a massive crucifix in his office. And I pointed to it and I said, right there, that's who he is. And he said, well, what did he do? And I don't know a whole lot. And so I said, it's self-explanatory. There he is. That's what he did. And he said, well, what else did he do? And I said, I think he walked on water. I don't know. And then he just cut to the chase and he said, you don't know Jesus. And I was like hurt. I'm like, whoa, I'm a seminarian. Like, people give me money for shaking hands just for being here. Like, I know what's going on. I know some stuff. And he said, but Santonio, it's okay. Like, you're here to learn and grow information and learn to know who he is. So don't worry about it. You have an opportunity here to grow. And so I said, all right, thanks. Cause that's I'm like, am I about to get kicked out? Like, I don't know. I'm failing the test. And so he said, he picked up a Bible and he said, everything that we have on this man, anything that he said is in these four gospels. So he said, here, take this Bible, read it, read these gospels, and then pray afterwards. And so he introduced me to Lectio Divina. I had no clue what that was. And so I sat in front of the Eucharist in adoration every single day. And I would pray. I would read for like understanding, like paragraph by paragraph, like once a day, I would just read one paragraph. And I'm like, all right, that's it. It's a really, really slow process, starting with Mark and ending with John. And so I read it all first. And then I went back and I started off with Mark again. And then I would do Lectio Divina with each one. And doing that in front of the Eucharist, it like broke open my heart and just like, I just fell in love with Jesus. It's really hard to explain. The best way that I kind of can explain it is like, I always knew who God was. Like, everybody knows who God is, or at least the idea of God, even atheists or agnostics, you know, they know like the idea of God or who people call God. Mm-hmm. But to have it in your heart is a whole different ballgame. And so my heart just exploded and just like flooded for Jesus. And I just wanted to know more. I wanted to serve more. I wanted to pray more. I just started to really fall in love with him. And that was just real. Yeah. I guess where that just started really to explode in my life. You know, like there's a moment where, and just a little foreshadowing, where after leaving seminary, I just started working for the church in like various capacities. But it was at that moment where I said to myself, I have to always do something for God. Like, I don't think I could ever do things just for me. You know, this, I have to live for him. And that was massive for me. And so going throughout seminary, you know, being able to be a part of a virtuous brotherhood and being able to just learn more about philosophy in certain things like Aristotle is it's another key factor that just helped me like learn more about relationships. You know, like, how do I view relationships? Like, what is a good relationship? How do you measure it? And he talked about a friendship of pleasure, a friendship of utility, and a friendship of excellence. And I said, well, I think the friendship of excellence is the one I should be having with everybody. It sounds the best, you know, and how do you add that and put a Catholic twist on it? Well, maybe just pray for people and talk to them about godly conversations and such. And so during that time in seminary, I wanted to be all in, but it was still difficult. That idea of being a priest was still difficult for me because I still had a longing on my heart to be a husband and be a father. Although I said, God, you called me to seminary. I'm going to wait for you to call me out of seminary. And so I'm going to stay here for now. I'm not just going to jump ship and leave because Father Scott said, do at least 2 years, mm-hmm. give it a shot because it's a lot to get used to. And then from there, make your decision. And so at the end of that second year, I said, okay, you call me here. I'll wait for you to call me out. And so I don't want to just leave right now. And so I continue to be in seminary. And so my junior year was decent, but then I had a summer assignment where I shadowed the exorcist priest of our diocese, one of the exorcist priests in the archdiocese. And I just remember like, once again, you know, like I had that moment of praying for this man who had died. I had another moment of just like recognizing like, wow, our faith is not just, once again, it's not just insular. Like there's so much of truly like helping people and being a service and being in persona Christi and like all of these things. And so seeing the reality of spiritual warfare was put on, I think I was able to kind of put on God's goggles, so to speak, you know, elevate the human mind to more of a godly mindset. And that is what happens in prayer, but it happened in more tangible for me when I would see some people sometimes walking in and they would have appointments and I would kind of think to myself, wow, they're really afflicted, you know, to the point where they can't figure this out on their own. They need the help of the priest and the faculties that he's been given, you know, by God. And so, during that time, once again, I actually fell in love, not just with Jesus, but with the priesthood. And I thought to myself, I think I can do this. You know, I think I can live this out well. And I promise I learned how to pray and like discern like well without dreams. But during this time of seminary, when I was on this assignment in the summer, I had another couple of dreams where I made a conscious decision before I went to sleep that night. I said, I think I'm gonna be a priest. Like, I think I'm gonna do it. Like, I'm all in, God. Like, thank you for choosing me. And so I that night I had these two dreams where I remember I was on a hike with a family and I remember holding a child and I didn't recognize any of these family members at all. I didn't know any of these people I was with. Everybody was in front of me and I was walking in the back. And I just remember like picking up this child, this little baby, and just holding him and smiling and kissing it. And I was like, wow, that's awesome. I don't know any of you people, but that was a beautiful dream. Mm-hmm. And then I had another dream where the same night where I was in the church, I was in my cassock, and I had one of my brother seminarians who became a priest as well. And he was in a cassock. And I just remember we had all these people in front of us, there was children there as well. And I just remember like, he was looking at me, he was like, hey man, we got this, we're in this together. And I was like, great. You know, I can lean on you. You can lean on me. Like, this is beautiful. And I woke up from that dream and I immediately called my spiritual director and I said, hey, we need to make an appointment. He's like, all right, cool. And so we made an appointment. We chatted about it. And he said, Santoni, I think that God has given you a unique decision where he's allowing you to just choose. Like, which do you want? Like, these are two goods here. Mm-hmm. And so he's giving you the option to choose the good that you desire the most. Yeah. Because he allowed, you know, our desires mean something to him. Mm-hmm. He's not just a tyrant or something like that, you know. Our free will is important. And I said, okay. And this whole time, you know, leading up to that moment, I would have chose, all right, marry your life, I'm out of here. Mm-hmm. But at that moment I said, priesthood. And I think going back to my broken relationship with my father, and since then we've been good. He's come to my wedding and everything, and we've kind of built our relationship back up and such. But I remember going back to that broken relationship that I had with my father growing up and everything, I thought to myself, well, I always wanted to be chosen by him, and he never chose me. You know, he never chose my family. He chose himself in various ways. And so God choosing me is, I think, fulfilling that need. And so God choosing me, I'll say yes, because I just want to belong. I have a sense of deep sense of belonging. We all do. And so I think really that was what was tugging on my heart. And so I said, yeah, God, I'm all in. Let's go. And so I go to seminary that for my fourth year, and I'm excited. My rector, vice rector, and spiritual director are like, all like, wow, he's different. And so before going actually to seminary that year, I remember I was praying and I went on a silent retreat and I was praying in adoration and I was just so excited. I said, God, I can't wait to be your priest. Like, this is so exciting. And I remember hearing this voice and this voice said, Santoni, I'm so proud of you. You've done so well, but now it's time to move on. And after learning so much about spiritual warfare and Satan and his tactics and such, I thought to myself, that's the devil. Like, I'm not listening to that, you know? And I was in the context of Eucharistic adoration when I heard it. Mm-hmm. And I'm just thinking, well, he got into the garden, you know, of Eden, so he can get in anywhere, but I'm not listening to that voice. Because I was so set on being a priest after that experience that summer. And so I take that back to my rector and my spiritual director, and they said, Santoni, you should probably pray about that. Mm-hmm. You know, that's something And you shouldn't just ignore it. Because if it was up to you before that your summer, you know, you wouldn't have been a priest. And if it's up to you now, you would be a priest. And if it was up to me, you would have been a priest and ordained the moment you step foot in this building, you know, because we need priests. But human error is real and God knows best. And so let's pray about what whose voice that actually was. And so I really spent, and it's so sad because I actually knew like almost immediately that I'm like, all right, that was probably God's voice then. But I spent the rest of that semester just kind of like praying about it and just really taking my time. And they encouraged it. They're like, hey, you know, this is potentially a lifelong decision here. So like, don't rush it. And so I did the consecration, Louis de Montfort, total consecration of Mary and to Jesus through Mary. And so at the end of that, it was just like very confirmed with a lot of peace in my heart that actually I'm supposed to leave seminary, even though I did not want to whatsoever, but I knew that was a decision, made by God that summer. And so I finally, told my spiritual director, and he was like, all right, you should tell the rector. And so I told the rector and they said, we want you to stick around. You're a really good witness here. And, you bring so much to the table and we'll actually, love to have you around for the spring semester as well. And I was like, thank you guys so much. I really appreciate it. And they just kind of did that to honor me. And so that was how I discerned out of seminary. And it was tough. It was difficult. It was almost as if like, I don't know, just leaving a family behind, you know? And so, but I knew that God was calling me forward.
Yeah.
I knew that during my sophomore year where I just prayed and prayed with and read those four gospels, I came across this one line, Matthew 28, where he says, go and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit. And I'm with you to the close of age. And I'm like, okay, this still applies. And I know that I was so on fire for God still. And I said, well, what am I going to do after I graduate with a philosophy degree? Like go to law school? I'm not built like that. I don't think I could do that. And, you know, we all have gifts and that's just not it for me. And I said, well, maybe being a missionary because I love God and I love talking to people. And so I met with this one girl who I had previously heard she became a missionary. And we met. She like paid for my Chick-fil-A. I was so like enlightened. I'm like, wow, thank you so much. This is great. And she said, yeah, this is what we do. And I'm like, wow, this is beautiful. Great mission. And she said, and we also fundraise our salary. And I said, come again. And what was that last part? And she said, yeah, we fundraise our salary. And I said, no, thanks. I checked out and I didn't hear anything else she had to say after that. And I was like, well, thanks for the Chick-fil-A. This was great food. God bless you and what you do. I don't think I can do that. Just knowing from my background and people at home, who would I ask? You know, I've never asked for money. It's like asking for money is seen as like begging and brings shame on a family and all these things. And so it's a lot of lies that needed to be uprooted. And that happened at a later time. And so I thought to myself, well, maybe I'll be a teacher. And so I became a teacher for a year. But then I was living with Focus Missionaries and I saw their witness of bringing men into the house, and they would play video games. If they were 21, they would have a drink, you know, or two, and they would like deeply talk about theology. And I just loved it. And they were journeying with men. And I said, why did I say no to this? You know, like this is really what I want to do at the end of the day. I let fear get in the way. And so I made a prayer to Mary. I said, Mary, please just, if I'm called to really fundraise my salary, you have to help me out and have to like to see it through. And I said, tell Jesus, please help me out and intercede on my behalf. And so I became a focused missionary and finances wasn't a worry. Yeah. I got fully funded within one parish talk. And it was once again, just like a testimony of like, wow, God. There was this one scripture passage where Jesus says, God allows the birds of the air to get their feet and the mammals on the ground to also get their fill as well. And so why do you think he wouldn't do that for his greatest creation? And I was like, whoa, here we go. he does care and he'll see it through. If it's meant to be.
Yeah. Well, what a great place to use those gifts. We have about 5 minutes left. You spent time in focus, but then also tell us about how you ended up with your current ministry.
Yeah. So I'll give the abbreviated version of all of that. So I was a focus missionary for a while, and then I became I worked for the Archdiocese of Philadelphia for a couple years. And from there, I was really trying to bring, I did urban outreach for the Archdiocese there for a couple years. And I was really trying to bring vagabond missions on to the city, which they do amazing work with inner city youth ministry. And it's beautiful. And so from there, I loved it so much that I jumped ship and I joined them, and I moved to Pittsburgh. And as I moved to Pittsburgh and working for them, my wife and I, we got married, and the priest who married us is Father Chris Donnelly, and he's an amazing priest, and yeah, just does so much good for the church. And so one day he invited me to pray about working at this women's shelter that he was starting. And I said, well, maybe, you know, I'm pretty comfortable where I am in Vagabond, as you know, things are going well here. And he didn't push me at all. But instead I went on a tour, and on this tour, I realized, like, wow, this is amazing. And it was a building that needed so much construction still. There was nothing up, you know, it's just bare bones. But he said, this is where women's lives are going to be changed here, hopefully. And, you know, through the grace of God. And I said, wow, something just was stirring up in me to be able to, yeah, at least want to like reconsider and throw my hat back in the ring of like, hey, if you still are looking for somebody to work here, please consider me. And so after some time of prayer and discernment, I said, you know what? Let's do it. I think I really want to, use my gifts in this way to be able to give back to these women who are in need. And so Gift of Mary is a shelter in downtown Pittsburgh, and our target population are women who are abused through either domestic violence, sexual exploitation, human trafficking, and such. And so we right now are still in the process of opening up. We're very much so a startup. Mm. And there's a lot that comes with that, but it is such a beautiful, beautiful witness to be able to just journey with some of these women. And so I personally don't journey with these women in and out, but we have missionaries who fundraise their salary, and we have a missionary of missionary of integration coordinator who is also working very closely with these women as well. Mm-hmm. And it is just so beautiful and heartbreaking at the very same time to be able to witness some of their stories and like things that they go through. But these women, you know, they have a great amount of needs for sure. But one of the needs that they want the most is a sense of community. You know, food is not too difficult to come by. And but like we came across this woman who hadn't talked to anybody in like 2 or 3 weeks, hadn't taken a shower in months. And when we were just caring for her, she said, this is the longest conversation that I've had in a few months. And this is just, she was ripped away from her family, unfortunately. And it was just a story of one of the women that we were able to help. And we helped her. There was a lot to her story, and I don't want to give too much of it away, but she had essentially tried to commit suicide, and she had relapsed on drugs. And we helped her get into a psych, and we're still journeying with her now. Yeah. And we have case managers that are still working with her closely, because she's not actually even from Pittsburgh. So we're actually also helping her in the ways that she needs to get help, and also to get home as well. That's a story in progress. But so far, it's a beautiful one, and a difficult one. But it's part of the work that we do with the women that we work with.
Well, that's wonderful. Well, giftofmary.org is where they can find more information about that ministry.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. We are looking for donations as a startup, and it is beautiful work, and so any donations are welcome.
Yeah. Well, I love that the language that you use, again, the language of journey, right?
Yeah.
We were talking beforehand that, you know, all of our different ministries in the church, in the world, right, they have different demographics, right, different groups of people, different obstacles, different issues they're dealing with. But in one sense, they're all connected in the sense of what we're trying to do together mm. is help a person recognize God is present to you. He loves you. Mm. Let's help you get back on that journey yeah. and see where he's taking you. And thank you so much for sharing your story with us tonight, Santonio. A great story of discernment and prayer and healing and now being able to share your gifts with others. It's just wonderful.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me. This has been an amazing time.
Awesome. Well, thank you. And thank you for being with us for this episode of the Journey Home program. I pray that Santonio's story is an inspiration to you. And hey, if you check it out online, you can find this video and share it with somebody else. You know, the young person in your life, the person who's maybe discerning, trying to figure out where they're supposed to be. What are they supposed to do with their lives? What great mission is God calling them on? Because he is calling them. Mm. He is calling them. He loves them. And he has great things in store for them. So share this story, and we'll be back again next week to share another one. God bless you. See you then.